You know, last night we took a family trip over to my parents' house in Henderson, Texas. About an hour and a half to get there, hour and a half to get home. We get back and I get a text message from Pastor Lyle about 7:30. Well, I didn't see it till nearly 8, and it said, "What are you doing?" And well, my initial thought was that he was going to ask me to go to a late showing of the new Star Wars movie. So I said, "Well, I know I'm not going to go tonight because we're tired. We've been traveling, so I'll wait a second. I'll let my phone charge up." And well, little did I know that he wasn't feeling very well. And he said, "I'll send you my outline. I'll send you what I had, and you can choose if you want to do that this morning." And so he sent it to me, and I hate doing that, and I think he's the same way. I hate using someone else's outline because I didn't write it in the same spirit. I don't know where his mindset was going. And so, I kind of determined pretty quick, I'm not going to use this. I'm going to have to come up with something else. And the first thing that came to my mind was the wise men. And I thought about the story because, we have heaven sent. Heaven sent is our theme. And you know what? Heaven sent the wise men where they were. And so I started to develop my sermon and nervous about it this morning. This is the first time, on staff that it's been an emergency situation of coming in to preach on a Sunday morning. I walked in this morning, Asher and I, we got here a little early, turned lights on, make sure everything was in order. And I walked back and I said, "Oh, well, I'm still going to have to do the announcements. Let me go grab a bulletin." And I picked the bulletin up and I promise you I had no idea what was going to be on the bulletin. And there it is, the wise men looking at the star. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed beyond measure. You know what? And I think God just has a certain way of working things out. And so this morning, I want to talk about that star. The star that was in the sky. You have, it attracted certain people. And this morning, I want to take a look at that. We call it the Northern Star, the Star of Bethlehem. And really, even today, scientists, we don't know what it actually was. Some say it was planets converging to cause a bright light in the sky. Some will even say it was the Shekinah glory that comes from the Old Testament that God set up just for those wise men to follow across. But what we do know is that it was there and that it got them to their destination. You see, but the thing I want to make sure, we put so much focus on the star. And I could ask you to draw me a picture of what the nativity scene would look like. And of course, you're going to add that star, that nice big pointed star right there in the top right or left corner. And we always remember that. And you see it in every scene on the side of the road. They have the star hanging up. Or in a Christmas play, you have the star hanging up. Even when we had ours, poor Allie, we made her go stand back there and have it on a string. So you know that the Northern Star was there. And it becomes so important, but the reason for the star is what I want to focus on. Because I don't want to leave you any doubt, because what we're going to look at today is we're going to look at three responses. But we're going to look at the responses to the star attraction. Yes, it's a pun. All right, the star attraction, there's no doubt about it, is Jesus Christ. This is what caught their attention. That's the whole reason. They didn't chase it trying to see what the star was. They wanted to get to where the star was leading them to. Because they were looking at the star attraction this morning. And I want to start off just reading something that I read to students at Brown Middle School Wednesday morning. I gave a Christmas Revealed lesson. And I read this because what I wanted to take them past was the manger scene. Because for us, our life starts at conception, when a mommy and a daddy love each other very much, and we'll keep it at that. But at that point is where our life starts, where we're born. That is our beginning. You see, the same was not so for Christ. And in Philippians 2, it says, "Though he was in the form of God, he did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself by taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of man." You keep Christ's beginning has no beginning. Christ has been around for eternity. He was a king who stripped himself of kingly garments of a throne to become the baby in the manger. He did not think it a thing to be grasped to be equal with God, but he emptied himself. That is the picture that I want you to see this morning to start off with. That's the manger scene I want you to see, is that Christ did not start as the baby, but Christ decided to strip Himself of His kingship, of His holiness, of His glory, so that He could become vulnerable. So that He could be someone that could be the sacrifice, the one that we cannot give. And so the star attraction, let me not, I don't want to mislead you or anything. I want to start off right, very strong with letting you know the star attraction is Jesus Himself. The baby in the manger is the star attraction. That is the star of the show. That is the reason for the season. That is the one, that we say Merry Christmas about. But then there are three instances here this morning that I want you to see. Three different people, three different groups that gave three different responses to the star attraction. And I want to challenge you this morning, where do you see your own response to the star attraction? Because in Christmas, very many times we can give very many different responses to Jesus and how He's speaking to us in our lives. And if you would, turn with me to Matthew chapter 2. You see, history doesn't talk about the wise men very much. Tradition gives them names and gives them positions. The Bible gives them 13 verses. But yet they've captured our attention and have inspired us, have motivated us to the point that they're in every manger scene from New York to Los Angeles. So what was it about these men that were so inspiring? And I think it really is everything that's happening around them at the same time. So if you'll follow with me, and we'll read. It'll be verses 1 through 13, and then we'll skip to verse 16 and be finished with our reading. Chapter 2 and verse 1, it says, "Now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, 'Where is He who has been born King of the Jews? For we saw His star when it rose and have come to worship Him.' When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. And they told him, 'In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet, And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.' Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, 'Go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word that I too may come and worship him.' And after listening to the king, they went on their way, and behold, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them, and it came to rest over the place where the child was. And when they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary and his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. Then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way." And skipping down to verse 16, "Then Herod, when he saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, became furious, and he sent and killed all the male children in Bethlehem, and in all that region who were 2 years old and under, according to the time that he had ascertained from the wise men." You see, when we look here, we're going to see three different groups of people. And all of them have a drastically different response to the Christ, to the star attraction. And I want to take it, I want to work backwards today. And a lot of times we read through and then we'll start at verse 1 and then we'll break it down and go through it all at the same time. But today I want to go backwards. And I want to start with King Herod. You see, there are three different responses, and the first response that we see, the first response to the star attraction is anger. A threat. You see, King Herod, he's a very interesting figure in history. If you do some background search on him, do some Googling, you'll find that he was not a very nice man. He actually had a son or two executed because he thought that they were going to threaten his throne and take it actually from him. And other times he was very harsh with his people. He was Jewish in practice only, not in ethnicity. He was actually an Edomite. And something very ironic, the Edomites actually in the Old Testament were the very people that did not allow Israel to pass through as they're going to the Promised Land. They actually threatened them, said that if you come through here, we will come against you with swords and spears. And God cursed them because of their inhospitality. And now we have the second chance for the Edomites. And once again, their lack of hospitality is showing up. And so King Herod, although he claims to be Jewish in practice and calls himself the king of the Jews, wanted no part of a Messiah coming. Because that Messiah would take his place. You see, the Messiah was looked at for a long time. Notice here, he didn't even know where the Messiah was to be born, but he knew that there would be a Messiah. But this causes anger for him. Anger so much that when he finds out that the wise men did not come back to tell him, that he ends up slaughtering all of the children in the region from 2 years and under. Because of the threat to his kingdom. And you know where this relates to where we were like, well, we're not that angry. We're not going to kill babies over this. But you know what happens here? The real truth of the matter is that King Herod didn't want to give up his own desires. He didn't want to give up himself to make way for the Messiah. This is the real issue. This is the real issue, is that we are putting ourselves in front here. King Herod, it's not that it's his kingship, it's that he's going to have to give up himself to make way. Everybody knew, all Jews knew, that when the Messiah comes, whoever king is in the way must step aside. The Messiah is the one that's going to rescue us from oppression, the one that's going to give us our independence back. He is going to make our kingdom here on earth again. So whatever king is there must step aside and get out of the way, because the new Messiah will take your place. And Herod cannot bear to give up his reign and his rule and his power and his glory and his money. And you know what? I think we're seeing that a lot today. More than we want to admit. When we were driving home last night, we come by a church, and I won't say where it was or how close or anything like that, but we see on the sign, Christmas Eve service, 6 o'clock. And I told Brittany, I guess she wasn't thinking. I said, that's not a really good service to have. I'm like, who would come on a Christmas Eve? I'm like, you're doing stuff on Christmas Eve. It's a Saturday night. That's not sounding good. And she said, babe, it's because they're not having service on Christmas morning. That doesn't make sense to me. I am glad that we've got a Christmas Day service. You know what, a few years ago when Christmas came around on a Sunday, I can remember in Fort Worth, number of churches canceling their Christmas Day services. How can we cancel a Christmas Day service? How can we not have a Sunday service on Christmas when the very reason for Christmas is why the church is here? I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. That doesn't regulate. We are King Herod in that sense, because we cannot allow our own ones to get in the way of coming and worshiping the very reason that we have presents and a Christmas tree and stockings and all the reason for the season and the jingle bells and all that type of stuff. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer would not come on if it weren't for Jesus being born 2,000 years ago. But we cannot handle coming on a Sunday to Christmas to worship the reason that we have Christmas. Oh, that just doesn't make sense. That's anger. That's getting in the way of ourselves. Oh, we've got to give up and understand. And if Herod would have understood, oh, listen, I'm no king at all. I'm king because the baby made me king. Understand that where you are in life today, what you have in life, the house that you have, the career that you have, the career that you don't have, everything that you are is because of the baby that came in the manger. There's nothing that you're going to put in front of him, because one day he will get the final knee and he'll get the final bow, and we will confess that one day that you are Lord and you are my priority at this point. Is your own wants, is your own anger taking place of the Lord this morning? Because Herod decided to act harshly because of his. Because he didn't want to give up himself. And so we see King Herod, but then we move on. The saddest one in this whole thing is the next one. And we look in verses 4 and 5 to see this. And at first glance, it really wouldn't have popped out on the page to you. in verse 4, and it says, "Assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. And they told him, 'In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet, and you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, and from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people.' Then Herod summoned the wise men and secretly ascertained from them the time the star had appeared," and we know that the wise men went. Did you catch it? The second one is apathy. The priests and the scribes, not one of them said, "I'll go with you." You see, this is not like you're waiting 4 years for the presidential election. All right? Their entire Old Testament was based on the Messiah coming. Their very hope was that one day the man child will come through the seed of Adam, through the seed of David, and one day he will come and he will redeem Israel. And how you have the very high priest and the scribes in Jerusalem, the top of the line, and here they go and tell the king he'll be born in Bethlehem. And not one of them offer to go with him. And that sounds bad enough. But then if you go look at a map, Bethlehem is 6 miles away from Jerusalem. 6 miles. It would take a couple of hours to walk there. 6 miles. To give you an idea, if you and I started walking up 148 here, it's 5.8 miles to Bucky's. 5.8 miles to get over to Bucky's. Now, I don't know that many of you would start raising your hand and want to walk with me to Bucky's. However, we're not talking about a Messiah sitting in there at the slushy machine. These guys have been waiting their entire lives. The very fact that they're high priests, that's what they're looking for. Imagine you get to be the high priest when the Messiah comes. The very one that has been written about. They knew that he would be born out of the seed of David. They knew that he would be born in Bethlehem. They knew he'd be born of a virgin. And the entire time, now you have wise men coming. They knew that there would be a star to show that the Savior was come. You can go and look at it. Balaam actually prophesied it. And it was in writing. They had been waiting for this Messiah to come, and they don't even offer to walk 6 miles down the road. Apathy. I don't care. It's not that important. Surely these guys aren't that big of a deal. Let them go find the Savior. And if it really is Him, then may I'll come down the road. Think about it. Well, maybe we get this idea that Herod threatened them not to. Maybe we get this idea that the king told them that don't go or there'll be consequences. This is the Messiah you're talking about here. This is the very one that you believe is going to be the king that is going to redeem you, that's going to put you back on top. Are you really scared of the Herod? Or are you just apathetic to the situation? Are we apathetic this Christmas season? Are we not really concerned about the star attraction? Man, this season, it allows for that so easily. Gifts. And there's nothing wrong with buying Christmas gifts. Nothing at all. But you know what? When we put so much focus on that, when we put so much focus once again on ourselves, the issue with Herod and the scribes and the high priests is simply a pride issue. This is a situation of to where the high priest, the scribes, and Herod, they're just looking inward at themselves. What is convenient for me? What is best for me? And they're trying to fill that "what is best for me" question with material things around them. To the point that the high priest and the scribes would not walk 6 miles to see the very Messiah that they have been waiting on, that they tell the people to look for, to have hope in. You see, they have been oppressed at this point in time by the Roman government. They are being heavily taxed to the point of people are trying to rise up in revolt, and the priests are saying, just wait. Wait for the Messiah to come. Because when the Messiah comes, then we will be redeemed. And now the Messiah is here and they won't even walk down to see Him and worship Him. You know, another little rant here about a Christmas day. About a month ago, I'm on Facebook. This is, of course, it's going to make you mad if it's on Facebook. All right, but this lady posts. I'm part of a youth pastor's web page or whatever. The former youth pastor of ours got us to join it when we got this job. And so, what ends up happening? It's really the Facebook page is basically for a bunch of youth pastors to whine to each other, and then occasionally share ideas. But most of the time, it's I don't get paid enough, or my pastor did this, or something like that. Well, some guy allowed it. The youth pastor's wife gets on there, and her big post was, I can't believe that the senior pastor's making us work on Christmas. That we got, you know what, we go to family dinners, we open presents that day, and he's going to make us come work on Christmas. I didn't comment, but I wanted to. I'm like, of course he's going to make you work on Christmas. You work at a church and you're meeting on Christmas. How can you complain about that? But it's so apathetic to the point of, instead of going on Christmas to worship, instead we're looking inwardly at what is convenient for us. Our process, our traditions of what we put in front of Christ. You see, the priests, they go through the motions. They understand the sacrifice. They go through the day of unleavened bread, the day of Pentecost, the Passover. They go through all the things talking about and trying to point people to the Messiah. But it's simply motions. It's simply just what they do. It's not who they are. And see, with Herod and the high priest, it's simply them going through the motions. Well, I'm the king of the Jews because I have the highest seat. I'm the chief priest because I know how to take you through the process on the day of Pentecost and the Passover. But it's not who I am. You see, Christ brings a heart change. Christ brings a life change. And when we get to our third response, we see that with the wise men. In verse 1, it says, Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star, and it rose, and have come to worship him. Notice there's no pause in time. They said, We saw the star, and we decided to come. And we know now that they don't belong in the manger scene as we have right down here. They actually don't belong there. Because they come about 2 years later. Because the star appears when the Christ is born. They start their travels. It took them 2 years to travel over to see Him. Possibly thousands of miles. We think that the closest place that they possibly could have been would be Persia. And many people put them as Persian astronomers that saw the star, and they realized and they knew the Jewish background because of the exile, and they decided to come over to see the Christ. But some say it's as far as China, and the mileage to China is over 7,000 miles away. Either way, this is a long trip that they decide immediately when they see the star and they understand the background, that they decide to come over here. And it doesn't say that they want to come and just check it out. They don't say they want to come over here and just see what's going on. It says they want to come and worship. There's a purpose for their travel. There's a purpose for their journey. There's an end to the game. It's not that we're just going to walk here and then we got to see a sight. It's not like a car crash on the side of the road that ends up clogging up the highway because we all just need to slow down and look at it. We got the rubberneck syndrome where you're starting to slow down and everybody just does this the whole time. All right, some people slow down and then you get to the end of it and you're thinking there's a big wreck because we've all, you know, slowed down. And you get up there and realize, no, everybody was just looking at the other lane on the other side of the median. That's not the case here. They're going with a purpose. When we get there, we shall worship. They are coming because they are giving up of themselves. How can the priest here, who knew so much and were so close, did so little? But the people who knew so little, so far away, but did so much. Where are we today? Because I would argue that we're close. That we know a lot. But how much are we doing? Is it ending with a purpose? Are we just going through the motions? It's very easy to correlate ourselves to the first two if we really sit down and reflect. These wise men made a massive journey because, not just because they were interested, they were committed. They wanted to worship. You know, I wonder if I'm this committed or, you know, I would almost call this an obsession. That they have to come and worship. You know, the only thing that I can really relate to in my life, you know, there's an argument. If I were to ask in this room, Miss Robin probably would give me the biggest argument, who is the greatest Dallas Cowboy of all time? We could go through a long, very long list. You know, and I know the oldies too, Staubach, Landry, all right, Harvey Martin, Randy White, Tony Dorsett, Calvin Hill. I mean, I go through. I know my history, all right? But for me, there really is no cowboy greater than Emmitt Smith. For me, it was in my time period. You know, that was when I fell in love with it. I got to watch him. And October 27, 2002 is a day that will be burned into my mind forever, because that was the day Emmitt captured the all-time NFL rushing leader title, to which I was witness because I was at the game. So, I'm just letting you know. But my obsession with Emmitt at that point in time had gone very... Let me just give you a little background. We have some time, you know, and surely you want to hear it. So, I can remember, you know, watching Emmitt on TV. Emmitt was my favorite player. They used to have Dallas Cowboy weeklies, you know. Some of y'all might have remembered those when we had newspapers also, all right? But you could buy them each week for $1, and you had a Dallas Cowboys weekly, and it just was about the Cowboys, front cover to back cover. And so my dad, every now and then, I would get one, because $1 was a lot for a newspaper. You know, the regular ones are 50 cents, and then you get a Dallas Cowboys special one. But in one of them, they actually had Emmitt Smith's parents owned a card shop in Pensacola, Florida, all right? And, well, when I got this and I saw this... They had an address and they had a phone number. Well, that was the wrong thing to give me at 10 years old. Because I knew that at some point in time in the year that Emmitt would be there to see his parents. And so regularly I called the Smith family at their card shop. And it simply was, hello, you know, Emmitt Smith card shop. Yeah, is Emmitt there? No, he's not. Is this DJ again? Yep. Yes, it is. No, sorry, Emmitt's not here. All right, so I'd write letters. Surely he's going to see the letters. Listen, I'm not proud of it, okay, but it happened. I could remember regularly, I used to have a tape recorder where you can put a blank cassette in there, hit the little circle, the record button. You could record. This is before, you know, iPhones and stuff like that, but you had the little machine. I hit the record button, and I would tell Emmitt what I thought of his year and what he could do better in the off season, how I thought that he could improve and get to the rushing title faster. And I simply would take that cassette, put it in an envelope, and send it to Texas Stadium. Surely they're going to give it to him and he's going to listen to it. And then on a plane, freshman year of high school, I was going to see my uncle in Colorado. And I was going back from Colorado to DFW to go back home. And as I'm walking on the plane, I simply look down, and lo and behold, there's Emmitt Smith with his wife sitting in first class. And my words were, "You're Emmitt Smith." And he said, "You are?" I said, "Your biggest fan." All right, DJ Poe, I got him to sign $1. I still have $1 to this day. I took a picture of him and his wife. Didn't think to put myself in the picture. All right. But, you know, you're not thinking at that moment. I go and sit down, and the only reason that Emmitt Smith and I did not become lifelong friends that day is because they would not let me back into first class. So Emmitt and I's history goes a very long way. And then, October 27, 2002, we get tickets, because as I'm looking at the schedule, if he's going to break it, here's my best chance to see it right here. So we get tickets. And luckily, he comes into the game, and he's only simply like 95 yards away. And man, we go in. I'm in the stands. And if I just told you about the game that day, it really wouldn't do it justice. And so I can remember fourth quarter, the 11-yard burst over the left side of the guard. Gets up, holds the ball up. You know, it was as if we did it together. You know. And after the game was over, of course, he was going to have his big press conference. Usually we got autographs and things like that. I think we got a couple. And we're walking this big line, and we're wondering where this line is going. And it's me, my dad, my 75-year-old grandpa, and then my little sister. And as we continue to walk in this line, all of a sudden, the line is getting thinned out. Because they're only letting certain people go to this big tent that is set up. And as we continue to walk, my dad, this is, sir, you can't go. And so dad gets pulled off, and I just keep on walking. Something's happening over there. All right, and so I keep on walking to Texas Stadium in the parking lot. So they pull my dad, and of course my sister follows him. My grandpa is 75. My grandpa has a hearing problem. He did not know what was going on. And so he continues to walk, and so we're walking beside him. And we're like, all right, Gramps, we're going to walk in as long as we can. We keep going towards it, and all of a sudden, you know, we're like, hey, what's going on? It's Emmett's press conference, you know, for his record-breaking, game. And so I just keep on walking. And all of a sudden, my grandpa realized my dad's not around. And so he steps out of the lineup and takes off and finds my dad. Well, I'm 15 years old. I'm big enough. I'll keep going. So I keep walking, and I realize we're going in. And this lady beside me, I said, listen, if anybody asks, I'm your son. That's all you need to know. And she says, okay, I think she's a little scared. That's all right. And so we go through. Sure enough, who are you with? I'm her son. And he was like, okay, go on through. And so I walk in, and I have a front row seat to the Emmett Smith record-breaking press conference. And if you go back and look at the video, you'll see my number one Dallas Cowboy jersey that says the Pope right across the back of it. As I'm in there, I chatted up with Jerry Jones, got his autograph right across the front. Man, I was big time. Okay, my dad, I could see him walking around the tent trying to spot me, see what has happened to me. He didn't know if I was kidnapped or if I was in the press conference. And so he looks through the thing, he looks at me, and he's like, okay. And I go, yeah. Oh yeah, deuces, all right, I'm in here. And so you don't go through all of that for somebody you're just interested in. I was obsessed, I'll go ahead and admit it. My obsession quickly won, though, because after the press conference, he's riding away in his cart, and I've got the game tickets, and of course, there's only 65,000 of them ever made. And I run, Emmett, will you sign this? Will you sign this? He says, not right now. When am I going to see you again? Do you not know who I am? We've got the Colorado flight together. And he goes off into the sunset. But you don't do something like that for somebody you're simply interested in. I went through thick and thin to be close to Emmett. But you know what today? Do we go through thick and thin to get close to the Christ? Somebody who did far more for me than ever a rushing title ever would. I can honestly sit here today and say I'm a bigger Jesus fan than Cowboy fan. And that's saying something, but I guarantee you, my wife can attest to that. But you know what? Are we angry when Christ tries to take our place? Are we apathetic to Him? Are we adored by Him? You see, because those wise men, they were adored. They came to worship. They didn't come because they were interested or they wanted to see the spectacle. They came because they knew there was business to be done in Jerusalem. There was business to be done in Bethlehem. And they thought that they were going to Jerusalem to tell everybody the good news and let them know. They thought they were coming to a party. Imagine, they thought they were coming into Jerusalem and everybody had already known it. They thought they were going to have this Christ, the Messiah, set up in the middle of the city and everybody was, it was worship time. And they come to find out the king doesn't even know where he's at and the scribes don't care. Let me ask you today, is Christ too far away for you? Is he too far away to come up here and to refocus and reprioritize him? It was 6 miles for the scribes. It's simply 30 to 50 feet for you. If Christ's not where he's at and where he's supposed to be in your life, let's go ahead and put him back where he's supposed to be. Because you know what? He did not think it a thing to be grasped, to be equal with God, but simply emptied himself so that you could have a sin-bearing sacrifice. Let's be adored by Him this season. Let's have adoration. Let's be willing to travel. Let's be willing to move ourselves aside. Let's be willing to be obsessed by Him this season. Joel, if you would, go ahead and stand. Eyes closed, heads bowed. We want to take a time, and you know what? This is classically called the invitation because it's simply that. It's inviting you to come and do business with God. This is not the slow time where we have to sing one more song and we know that we're about to go to lunch. The entire service hinges on this moment right here. It really does. Because this is your time for response. All those feelings, the conviction that you have, everything that you've been going on inside of you through the entire service with the songs, with the sermon, it comes to this moment right here of what are you going to now do about it? The scribes knew a lot. They were so close and did nothing. It doesn't matter how close you are or how much you know today. It matters how you apply it and what do you do with it. So I'm going to invite you to respond today. I'll be right down here at front.